face in the mirror, but of course we didn't. She had been a Louisville fay, with a lineage as close to royalty as the United States would allow, and it showed in her dark blue eyes, her sleek black hair, and the generous width of her smiling mouth. For my part, I was nominally a Louisville baker, a name with its own distinguished history, but it had always hung oddly on me, adopted from distant Tonkin and with a face that people variously guessed was Chinese, Japanese, Mexican, Venezuelan, or even Persian. The lipstick looked old-fashioned on her, giving her an antique air, but it brought out the red in my skin, roses instead of tomato, more lively than not. Daisy murmured with pleasure over the difference, and she stuffed the little pot into my pocket, saying of course it was meant to be mine. She paused, with her hand on my hip, both of us hanging upside down in front of the mirror. It was one of Daisy's moments of intense stillness, rare when she was a girl and growing rarer. It gave her pretty face a slackness and an odd hollowness that suggested that anything might have come in to nest behind her eyes.
"I am glad you came when I called you," she said with a slight hiccup. "I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't."
"Been prostrate with grief and pined for me, I imagine," I said lightly, and she smiled with relief. We both looked up when we heard the distant slam of the front door, and then, louder and more insistent, the boom of Tom's voice. There was a briefly startled look on Daisy's face, as if she had forgotten any world where we did not merely drift along the ceiling of her enormous house. And then she took my arm.
"Of course, that's right," she said, pulling me towards the door. "We've arranged to have my cousin to dinner tonight. Come along, my darling. I promise you will find him utterly delightful."
"Well, if you say so, I'm sure he is." It was Daisy's avocation, setting up her friends and making connections between the members of the right set. She was somewhat famous for it, leaving plenty of variously happy couples and namesake babies in her wake. I had always been a bit of a failure for her, something that I decided was more amusing than anything else. I did well enough for myself, after all, back in Louisville and now in the years since I had come to New York. We came back in the tall sun porch where we had started, settling on the enormous couch at the center of the room. We tamed our ruffled hair and smoothed down our dresses just moments before Tom appeared in the doorway. He was followed, with a touch of reluctance, by a rangy young man in shirt sleeves, his jacket thrown over his arm and his quick dark eyes taking in everything around him with interest. He entered with an easy smile and a certain dislike for Tom, which made me like him right away. He gave me a second look, but didn't stare, and came to kneel next to Daisy's end of the couch, paying her the court she liked best. They spoke of the time they'd passed in Chicago, while I was allowed to do what I liked best, which was to watch from a cool distance before I had to chance an engagement. Tom hovered close by, finally trampling their conversation with a question of Daisy's cousin's occupation, and by coincidence, giving me his name. Nick Carraway of the St. Paul Carraways, only son, war hero, and apparently at loose ends after coming back from overseas. I remembered vaguely that I had heard of some kind of trouble between him and a girl from St. Paul, a Morgan or a Thule, something dishonorable, but you wouldn't know it by the way he sat as if butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He looked like a polite man, though of course you can never tell. I wondered that Tom couldn't seem to recognize the barbs in Nick's words to him, barbs that made Daisy's eyes glint a little. Acid under the good manners, and I liked that quite well. More interesting by far than the war hero was someone with bite to him, and I thought that rather a lot of people might not know that about Nick. When he scored another point off Tom, making Daisy's husband snort and declaim, I sat up with a laugh. "Absolutely," I said in agreement, giving Nick permission to look at me fully. I smiled at him, levering myself off of the couch and letting him see a little more. I was in my low gray suede heels, giving me a soldier's jaunty carriage. When I rolled my shoulders back to ease the cramp that was forming there, I saw him lower his eyes briefly with a slight smile. The butler entered with four tall glasses filled with something delicious.